Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Metaxas Show.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me. So I am telling you, don't be fooled.
The real Eric's in jail.
And welcome.
Hey there, folks. Today is Monday, the 21st of December, the darkest day of the year. The shortest day in the year. It's true. I thought yesterday might be, and I looked at my my phone to see when the sunset was, and it turned out that the sunset in New York yesterday was like, I don't know, 4:31. Today it says also 4:31, but that's amazingly, like, that's just so early. It's the darkest day of the year. Now, in a way, you could say that it is hope in a nutshell. There's nothing more hopeful than that beginning today, the days will get longer and longer and longer, and it will be more and more light starting today. So it's an extraordinary thing, this December equinox today, the darkest day of the year. Also happening today, something that hasn't happened in these 800 years. I was just a child, so I have no memory of it. But in the year 1226, remember? Oh, sure you do. In 1226, there was a conjunction in the sky of Jupiter and Saturn. The only conjunction possible, of course, between Jupiter and Saturn would have to be in the sky. I think you knew that. They're planets. But they're part of what C.S. Lewis gets into when he talks about the medieval planets. The medieval planets were different than our planets. They were the planets that you could see without telescopes. So they considered the sun and the moon to be planets, right? Things that move in the sky. And then the planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And that was it, because we couldn't see, you know, past Saturn with the naked eye, but you could see them. So tonight, for the first time in 800 years, or to be really, really, you know, accurate, so only 794 years, we're seeing a conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. Now, it's interesting because most of us know that astrology is not something consonant with biblical belief. On the other hand, I do think that God speaks in all kinds of ways, speaks through the weather, speaks through signs in the heavens. He's done it before. The rainbow was a sign from God. And the question, of course, is there any meaning to the idea that this is the darkest day of the year, 2020, the darkest day of the darkest year, let's be honest, that we've experienced, and that tonight, on the darkest day of the darkest year, we have the strange conjunction. Now, when it happened in 1226, they thought it was the Christmas star. I don't think it is the Christmas star. I actually think that maybe you could think of it that way, but we did a Socrates in the City event a few years ago at St. Aldate's in Oxford, England, with Colin Nickel. We are going to be playing that. We'll put it on our YouTube channel. But it was an amazing Socrates in the City event where he makes the case in a big book. It's brilliant and I think definitive that the Christmas star, which happened, I guess, 6 BC, would in fact have been a comet. And it's so fascinating. So I don't think it was the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. Nonetheless, we also did an interview I did with Michael Ward, who wrote Planet Narnia, which is just one of the most spectacular books I've ever read, one of the most amazing theories I've ever encountered. And Michael Ward is a friend. And I have to say, it was actually as a result of me that my friend, the filmmaker Norman Stone, made a documentary on the subject. It's called The Narnia Code, but it's so fascinating. If you're into C.S. Lewis, oh, there's nothing more fascinating. So we're going to post that on our YouTube channel as well. You can find it at SocratesInTheCity.com anytime. But if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, I want you to look at that. But he talks about how Lewis and how the medieval world were aware of each of these planets as having kind of a character, right? So when you say somebody is jovial, you're referring to Jove, which is Jupiter. That's the name for Jupiter. And to be jovial is to be merry and jolly, kind of like Santa Claus. To be Saturnine is to be kind of scowling and negative. To be martial is to be bellicose, war. Venus, of course, the planet of love. To be mercurial, obviously, to be to have a temper that goes this way and that. So every one of the planets had this kind of poetic cosmology surrounding it. And it is so fascinating. So if you watch the Narnia Code, which is the documentary, BBC documentary made by my friend Norman Stone on the subject, I think I'm in it. It'll give you something on that. If you watch my conversation with Socrates in the City with Michael Ward, you'll get the whole Megillah. It's so beautiful and amazing. And Michael Ward, for having discovered this, I'm not going to say more, but he discovers something which I consider to be the greatest literary discovery of the 20th century. No exaggeration. Watch the video and you'll see what I'm talking about. It is a stunning, stunning discovery having to do with C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles. It should have been on the front page of the New York Times, but of course we know they're dead. So, wanted to say those things. I want to say in hour two, in this hour, we're talking to John Zmirak and I believe to Kevin McCullough. I also want to say we're going kind of on a skeleton crew. I don't know if we're going to be doing new shows in the next week and a half or so. We may do some, but we're also going to be playing some golden oldies. Yeah. My performance with Peter Noon and Herman's Hermits, a lot of the old stuff. That's also, I want to mention that a lot of people keep saying, how do I find out about these prayer calls? How do I find out about this? How do I find out about that? You have to go to ericmetaxas.com. That's my personal website. You have to sign up for the newsletter. If you cannot do that, email us. It says contact. We'll sign you up. We'd prefer if you signed yourself up. We'd also prefer if you signed up your whole family and everyone you've ever known, because there's no other way for me to get information out sometimes. Facebook has been shadow banning me. I'm stunned. I used to get way more shares on Facebook. It's just dropped like a stone. Twitter, of course, that's another story. YouTube has taken some of our videos off. So we'd love you to follow me at ericmetaxas.com and get the newsletters. I'm sending them out more often. I don't want to forget to say also, so much to say, our friend John Rankin, we've had him on this program so many times. He's one of my dearest friends. He's a super genius, an amazing gift. And he has been extremely ill lately. As you know, a number of months ago, his son died. That's another story. But John is himself in real danger. So I ask you, my dear friends, pray for John Rankin. He is such an extraordinary gift, such a dear friend, such a man of profound faith and profound intellect. There is so much I hope he gets to do. But he's in danger and he needs your prayers. So we ask your prayers for our sweet friend, John Rankin. Also want to say before we go, don't forget that our campaign with CSI continues. You have to go to MetaxasTalk.com. That's our radio website, MetaxasTalk.com. To give, we need you to give. We need your help to free slaves in the Sudan, to bring them to safety in southern Sudan. This is as real as it gets. Greatest gift you could give for Christmas is to free a human being from slavery. Do it in the name of somebody that you love. Do it in the name of somebody that you don't like, just to bless them. CSI, that's at MetaxasTalk.com. When you go to MetaxasTalk.com, you'll also see that you can shop for a number of things. Albin's amazing books, hats, t-shirts. Oh, look. Look,
I got a t-shirt. All right.
Now, listen, Albin, we joke around, but yesterday I was at the Shop Metaxas site at MetaxasTalk.com, and I'm not joking. The prices are too low. I'm not joking. They're like insane. I don't think we're making 5 cents on each hat or whatever. I'm not even joking. Folks, I'm warning you, these prices are going to go up. I don't care if you need them for Christmas presents. If you don't buy them now, you buy them 6 months from now, they're going to be double. I'm not joking. Like, it doesn't make sense. Same thing, if you go to Mike Lindell's mystore.com, we'll be back with Zmirak.
Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Take a look in the 5 and 10.
Glistening once again.
Folks, look, I have John Zmirak. Listen, I have John Zmirak. John Zmirak, you wrote an article. What's the title of this article at stream.org?
Thanks, Eric. It's called Americans Are Being Sold Out by Our Chiefs as the American Indians Were.
Okay, please explain to my wonderful audience what you say in that article, and I hope they will go to stream.org and that they will read the article and print it out and share it with everyone they know. Tell us what is in that article. And then after that, I want to talk to you about the film Against the Tide, starring John Lennox and Kevin Sorbo, which is amazing because I saw it last night because you told me to. Go ahead.
Thanks, Eric. Well, in my piece at stream.org, I talk about the weird feeling that I have, that I think you have, that I think thousands of Americans who stepped out at the Jericho March and just millions of Americans across the country have, that something very strange is happening, that the election seems to have been stolen from us, that the Georgia runoff is likely to be stolen using the same means, stuffed ballot boxes, fake ballots, ballots that don't match their signature. We just an appeals judge just threw out a request by Republicans in Georgia to have ballot signature matching. If that happens, we're going to have a one-party state. The Democrats have sworn that if they take the Senate, they're going to pack the Supreme Court with 8, 10, 12 new people who will eliminate the Second Amendment, our gun rights, will weaken the First Amendment, our religious and free speech rights, that they'll add new states to the union, that they'll eliminate the filibuster, they'll eliminate the Electoral College. In other words, a whole new system of government will be imposed on us, having used ballot fraud. That's a very strange feeling.
Wait. In hour two today, I don't think I told you, but Steve Bannon, I'm going to play what he said last night on this prayer call. He was on the prayer call that I've been doing twice a week, at least. He spoke for 45 minutes, and it was unbelievable what he said. I mean, it's not much that I haven't been saying, but it's more articulate with way more definition and detail. And it was amazing. And it's effectively what you're saying now. So my question to you, since I can't ask him, how is this different from 1776? In other words, if people are using un-American, anti-American means to take office, and when they take office, will use their power to oppress us in ways that I consider worse than the way the government of George the Third was oppressing the American colonists. Where are we, John? Because that's what most people don't see. That's what's so frustrating. And it's why people like you and me and Steve Bannon and so many others sound crazy, because compared to an ignorant citizen of the United States, what we're saying just doesn't make sense. And yet I have yet to see how it doesn't make sense. I'm listening very carefully. It sounds like this is we're being threatened with tyranny, and that why wouldn't we do everything we can to fight against it? And now I'm not yet talking about picking up arms, but I'm saying that at least demanding from our leaders, demanding that they give us pure transparency with this election. Otherwise, I don't see how we can move forward. I simply logically don't see how Americans will accept President Joe Biden under these circumstances. We should not, and we will not. And that's where we are.
Well, I'll tell you, Eric, the difference is a very sad one. In 1776, our elites were devoted to liberty. They had been steeped in a strong, what we would now call evangelical Christianity. They were devoted to gun rights, and they saw those as directly linked to religious liberty. Our leaders were people who served in state legislatures, who'd run local cities, who'd run communities, who were very much attached to the principles of self-government. Our elites today are people like Brian Kemp of Georgia and Secretary of State Raffenberger of Georgia and a lot of the writers at National Review and the New York Times and the American Conservative who present themselves as conservative columnists. These people are not acting like the colonial leaders who stood up for liberty and fought against the British. When, remember, the British were taking away liberties the American colonists had had for almost 200 years. They were vitiating existing colonial charters, taking away local self-government that had existed since people like the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock. So George III was the innovator. He was the revolutionary. He was the guy making radical changes. Our leaders now are more like, and it's very sad for me to say this, they're more like those Indian chiefs who over and over again were corrupted by colonial or British settlers. They would get hold of the chief. They would bribe him. They would give him casks of rum. They would give him boxes of rifles. They would give him gold and scissors and trinkets. And he would sign away the tribe's land on their behalf. The Republican leaders in these states, these seven states that were stolen, the Republican leaders who stopped those state legislatures from refusing Biden delegates, which were obtained by fraud, and instead, as is their constitutional right, appointing Trump electors, or stopped them even from doing honest investigations in state after state after state, they refuse access to the ballot boxes. To the voting machines. Right now in Maricopa County, the government has demanded, a judge has actually said, you have to produce those voting machines. And the county said, no, they just voted to defy a subpoena. These people are flouting the law. They obviously have something to hide. The prize is enormous. Control over the largest, the most powerful, richest country in the world. Now, who is bribing them? Who is intimidating them? Who is frightening them into it? We know that the government of China desperately wants to get rid of President Trump. We know that. We've seen how much money they're willing to spend. They gave billions to Hunter Biden, but we're supposed to believe Joe Biden doesn't have access to it. Imagine Ivanka Trump got $3 billion from Vladimir Putin. Do you think the liberals would be dismissing it as a conspiracy theory if we said maybe President Trump's getting some of that money? Come on. Our press, many of our Republican leaders, many of our church leaders, and some of our Christian commentators seem to be eager to get on board or resigned to getting on board with the new regime. I think some of them are really positioning themselves so they can say, when an anti-Christian regime is imposed on us, when more and more of our rights are stripped away and more people are silenced, I was kicked off Twitter last week. They're positioning themselves to be, well, I was the voice of reason. I oppose those conspiracy theorists. Let me be the spokesman for the reasonable Christians out there. And, you know, make sure I don't go to the camps. I don't want to go to the gulag. Effectively, they're auditioning to be collaborators or capos in the gulag camp. And it's extremely disheartening to see them attack good people, attack leaders who've been faithful in the past. And they seem to be selling their inheritance for a mess of pottage.
Well, you know, John, you wrote an article. I had you on this program to talk about an article where you were calling out these people. I don't know. What did you say? They were snivelers. You used the word. I can't remember. It was
collaborators. I said they were like Frenchmen running after the Germans.
No. This is more recently. In any event, I guess the point is that.
Oh, well, servile Christians. Okay. Christians. Those are Christians who think it's more Christian to be persecuted and think if we resist persecution, that's somehow unchristian, and we'll be virtuous by, we should turn the other cheek when they're trying to steal the whole country for communist China. That's not what Jesus was talking about. He talked about a smack on the cheek, not a knife to your wife's throat or a gun to your child's head. That's what we're facing now.
I think my problem is that the people that you're saying are like this and the people that I have said are like the German Christians in the 30s, rather than take it as a wake-up call and address what we're saying on the merits, they take umbrage at the accusation, whether it's David French or Rod Dreher or any number of people that, in other words, rather than try to think, are we making a point that's valid? Because the people in Germany, I would say, since many of them were my relatives, these were good people. These were not evil people. They misunderstood the situation and grew to rue the day for the rest of their lives. And so it's meant to be a wake-up call. Maybe we use language that was incendiary, but the serious question to me, to these people, some of them real friends, is can you think about what we're saying? Can you think about whether you're being faint-hearted at a time when you need to be lion-hearted? That's my question. We're going to be back with John Zamirak. Don't go away.
Goodwill to men from heaven's all gracious King.
Boom, 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 boom.
Hey, folks, I'm back with John Zamirak. John, what say you?
I think when someone has already made a profound moral compromise and has already rationalized it to himself and has become sort of comfortable with it, the last thing he wants to hear are rational, persuasive, much less prophetic arguments against it. It's not common that people behave like King David when he was called out by the prophet on what he did to Uriah and his wife Bathsheba. Much more common is the way Herod reacted towards John the Baptist. Rod Dreher, in his latest column attacking his fellow Christians, said, "For my sins, I watched the Jericho March all 6 hours." And I just thought, I wish Rod Dreher would spend 6 minutes or 6 seconds looking at the evidence of election fraud instead of 6 hours and then writing a long, snarky column making fun of his fellow Christians and getting patted on the head by Jake Tapper of CNN.
I don't want to talk about Rod anymore because he is a friend, and I was extremely dismayed by what he wrote. I think he's completely wrong.
But I'm just saying, spend some of the time, any of you, spend half the time you're using to attack us for talking about election fraud to look at the evidence, to read Peter Navarro's report.
That's my issue. It's like, if you want to be snarky and so on and so forth, like, is this... I feel like we're in a terrible war and people are saying, no. I'd rather criticize your uniform.
I don't get it.
I don't get it. Let's turn to something
positive,
unmitigatedly positive.
Yeah.
There's a film put out. We had him on recently, John Lennox, my friend, John Lennox, Dr. John Lennox, a great, great, great thinker and writer, Christian apologist, who has debated and wiped the floor with Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins and others. He is the subject of a film. Kevin Sorbo is in it, and he's really the subject of the film. It's called Against the Tide. We spoke about it on this program. I didn't get to watch it till last night because a friend of mine named John Zamirak told me I must watch it, so I watched it. John, how do we get everybody to watch this?
Well, it's available on Amazon Prime and I think iTunes. Let me talk about this. John Lennox is, in a sense, the new C.S. Lewis. And in fact, he was a student of C.S. Lewis's in Oxford. And he tells some nice stories about what C.S. Lewis was like and what it was like to have C.S. Lewis as a teacher. Can you imagine that? In the film, it starts at the mathematics department of John Lennox's mathematics chair at Oxford. And Kevin Sorbo talks to him. They go to the Eagle and Child, the inn where C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and the rest of the Inklings used to compare notes on The Lord of the Rings and The Chronicles of Narnia. Sorbo plays an honest skeptic. We recall his film God's Not Dead, where he played an atheist professor, one of the new atheists, the aggressive, angry, intolerant atheists that emerged in the early 2000s. And of course, John Lennox has written a wonderful book on that, which I just finished reading last night, called Gunning for God, Why the New Atheists Are Missing the Target. And I recommend it very highly. But in the film Against the Tide, Lennox addresses the arguments of the new atheists, and we see clips of him debating Christopher Hitchens, debating Richard Dawkins, and he shows the fundamental intellectual mistakes and instances of intellectual laziness that are at the heart of the new atheist enterprise. Once he sort of brought us around to give the intellectual case for just theism, you know, theism of the kind that we share with Muslims and Jews and some philosophers like Aristotle, he goes further. They go to the Holy Land and they retrace the steps of the life of Jesus Christ from his childhood to his resurrection to his ascension. And Lennox carefully parses the evidence for the truthfulness, the historical accuracy of the Gospels themselves. It is an intellectually satisfying, heartwarming, and fascinating film that I saw it in the theater, but it's now mostly streaming.
I watched it last night on my computer, and I just thought, wow, I'm just astounded someone made this. It's the kind of thing I wish I had made, and I'm suddenly thrilled that I don't have to think about making it because someone else made it.
Yeah.
It's called Against the Tide, and the way to find it, folks, this is easy. In your search engine, just go to put Against the Tide in quotes, Against the Tide, and put streaming, and it'll come up. I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon Prime. I'm sure it's on YouTube. I'm sure there's a number of ways you can watch it, very inexpensive, but wonderful film. Decent length. It's about an hour and 40 minutes, really soup to nuts, but nobody's better than John Lennox. I mean, he is stunning. I did a number of interviews with him for Socrates in the City. You can watch those at any point. Obviously, go to socratesinthecity.com. I did, I think, 4 interviews with him. But really just amazing human being and an amazing mind. And he is the star of this film, Against the Tide.
And you could also go on YouTube and find his debates against Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins. And he acquits himself extremely well. In fact, he kicks their butts because he's actually thought about these philosophical arguments behind the existence of God, whereas these people seem satisfied with snarky sophomore talking points.
You know what? We're going to have to close it there. But I got to tell you, there is nothing more pathetic than the performance of Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, and the others in these debates and in their books. It's pathetic. I mean, I got to be honest, these people might be smart, but they have nothing to say except snark, nastiness. It's pathetic.
They're quite literally the kind of sophists whom Socrates exposed and was killed for exposing.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Folks, thanks for listening.
Slice up the fruitcake. It's time we hung some tinsel on that evergreen bar. Snow.
Oh, hello there. It won't be long. Folks, I'm talking to Kevin McCullough. Kevin McCullough, let me tell you, before you start talking, in hour two today, I'm playing a long soliloquy that Steve Bannon gave yesterday on the prayer call that I've been doing every other, twice a week, I should say. We had him kind of give an update on where things were, and I was so fascinated by what he had to say. Boy, is he right in the middle of everything. And he said pretty much what I've been saying more eloquently and with much more detail, but that we cannot allow this election to be stolen. We must fight. We must do everything we can to force our legislators to take action. It really was extraordinary. So we're going to run that in hour two, and maybe you can listen to it because I was just amazed by it. One thing that he said was that anybody, whether General Flynn or General McInerney, who are talking about martial law and stuff, he says, that's crazy talk. This is not the time to get into that. We've got a number of other paths to victory. Now is not the time to talk about that. That's just distracting. And I think he's probably right. What do you think?
I would hold to that. I got asked far too many times over the weekend on social media about the martial law option. And I'm like, we're not anywhere near requiring that at this point. The president just yesterday filed with the Pennsylvania case that everybody mistakenly thinks has been thrown out of the court. It has not been thrown out of the Supreme Court. And the president co-filed yesterday for that writ of certiorari or whatever it's called. They're asking for a decision on the merits of the Pennsylvania case in which the legislature was kind of blocked out of the remaking of the election law. And that's 20 electoral votes. If the Supreme Court takes it and finds in favor of the plaintiffs, they have to figure out something else to do with those electors.
Where do you also get 20 electoral votes? I thought Pennsylvania was 10 electoral votes.
No, it's 20. It's a bigger prize than a bunch of the others. But another kind of interesting thing happened over the weekend. And you were talking about Steve Bannon. I tuned into a little bit of Turning Points conference that happened over the weekend.
That's our friend Charlie Kirk's organization, Turning Point USA.
And a bunch of our friends were speaking there, Seb Gorka, Congressman Matt Gaetz, a whole bunch of others. And I got to tell you, if the media is trying to isolate and kind of gaslight Trump supporters across the country, they're doing a pretty poor job of it because the atmosphere was on fire. They had tens of thousands of people there. And Matt Gaetz flat out said that on January 6th, he's challenging the Electoral College findings. I think this is about maybe the sixth or seventh congressman I'm aware of that has agreed to do that, publicly stating it. You've also got the new incoming senator from Alabama who's willing to do it as a first act in his United States Senate career. That's pretty remarkable. And Rand Paul, Ron Johnson, who's from a swing state that's in question, and even Ted Cruz have all indicated that they may be willing to do that as well. We're a long way away from having to declare martial law. There will be a number of things that need to be discussed. There will be more evidence that comes out between now and January the 6th. And at the end of the day, it might end up being that the congressional delegations themselves determine the Electoral College outcome, which is a constitutional 12th Amendment related process that would be approved.
I guess I was listening to Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin the other day on another call, and he said that there are a couple of scenarios. This is where I get lost in the weeds, but that there's one scenario where you need the actual Senate and the actual House to vote, in which case we couldn't win in the House because everybody votes. And then there's a whole other scenario where it goes to the House and it would be one, each state would get one representative, in which case
right,
the Republicans would win.
That's the 12th Amendment issue. And I'm a little fuzzy on what happens once the electors are challenged, but I know that that kicks off the series of incidents that then would be required. And if they can't come to a conclusion, I think that's where it kicks over to the 12th Amendment. If they can't come to a resolution of accepting the electors, then they have to go to the next option. And what's amazing about this, Eric, is if you read the Constitution, the 12th Amendment is very clear. If you can't come to this conclusion, then this is what's next. And if that doesn't work, then this is what's next. And the founders laid it out fairly simply. But we'll have to wait and see how those things go down. And we're going to hope that, you know, for the sake of honesty, transparency, and confidence in the country, that these congressmen who say they're going to do this and the senators that say they're going to do it are actually going to stand up and do it. We've got a lot of things that are very concerning shaping up in a potential Biden administration, and we need to be doing everything we can to fight the good fight, which is prevent, at this point, the Biden administration from ever coming to power, if it's at all possible.
They're not going to come to power. I say that and people can mock me, but I cannot believe that in this nation, we will accept this level of opaqueness. We do not in this country traditionally accept it when people put up their hands and say there's nothing to see here. Don't look over there. No. We are still a free people, and enough Americans, millions and millions, tens of millions of Americans are not only not convinced that Biden didn't win fair and square, but are convinced that there was fraud. Now, I just have to say, if you're so cynical that you don't care about that, you are hardly an American. In America, we're supposed to care about these things. Doesn't matter what party you are, but we are supposed to care about these things. And the media is telling us shut up and move along. When you do that, you know, it's going to be hard for most Americans to take you seriously.
And it's not just the media. It's the bought and sold leftists that have now replaced the average Democratic voter in the country. And I'm meeting these people on Twitter like you wouldn't believe. But when we come back, let's because I see your producer's giving us the wave sign. But when we come back, let me delve into the types of people that are making that shut up and move on statement. And let's see if their argument holds merit.
Yeah. And by the way, among that group of leftist agitators, I would put Mitch McConnell, who's been a member of the swamp since time immemorial. We'll be right back.
Remember the best and the merriest you ever did have. Everybody's waiting. They're all congregating. Waiting for the man with the bat.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holiday. But no matter.
Folks, final segment with Kevin McCullough. Yeah, we got him on this program. You didn't think I could get him? I got him. I pulled some strings. I made it happen. In hour two, we're going to be listening to Steve Bannon. Oh, boy. Wait till you hear that. But Kevin, what's cooking, man?
Well, as we were just talking in the last segment, the people that are criticizing, everyone that's saying, hold on, can we just take a minute to examine and have transparency here? The people that are criticizing those people are the same ones. They're loud and mouthy about transparency now, but they were the ones that told us that the Russia hoax was real. They were the ones that told us that impeachment was legitimate. They're the ones that have constantly mimicked this meme saying that the only reason Trump became president was so that he could get rich. I've never understood that argument at all. He's gotten systematically poorer the longer he's been in public office. But here's what you really need to understand. And I started using this hashtag over the weekend. I hope every Eric Metaxas listener uses this hashtag going forward, because I think that when you do speak truth, it does make them uncomfortable. And if my inbox is of any indication, it also makes them swear more. But this is the steps. You need to win an election. Here's how Joe Biden did it. You picked six cities that had Democrat machines that would be more or less unaccountable to the people. You stopped counting as soon as you knew what the margin was that you needed. You infused signature-free or non-verified signature ballots. You infused them to the levels that you needed. And then you declared victory the next morning, and everybody says it was a historic win. It's not any more complicated than that. You picked six. You cheat big, Joe did it. This is the new mantra for how.
So what's the hashtag?
Pick six, cheat big, Joe did.
Pick six, cheat big, Joe did. So three hashtags.
Nope, all one word.
Pick six, cheat big, Joe did.
Yep.
Well,
they don't like it very much. They don't like it very much at all.
Yeah, well, that you're right, and it's wonderful to have it boiled down so clearly. I want to say again, and we're going to hear it in hour two from Steve Bannon. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a time to be outraged, to say I will not accept something. If you want to go with the pack, if you want to go with the flow, if you want to drift along with the zeitgeist, welcome to hell. If you care about truth, if you care about liberty, if you care about your fellow human beings, this is not the time to go with the flow. In history, people often go with the flow. But after history becomes history, you look back and you say, how did they do that? What was wrong with them? Why didn't they wake up? Why did they nail Jesus to the cross? I certainly wouldn't would have done that. Yes, you would have. Yes, I would have. God in his mercy sometimes tries to wake us up and to give us an opportunity to not do the thing that we would do. We're not better than those who shouted, "Crucify him." We're not better than those who allowed the Nazis to take power and to do what they did. We're no better than they are. The only difference is God is giving us an opportunity to be different. And you can take that opportunity or you can let it go. It's that simple. Kevin McCullough, my friend, just love having you on. Your tremendous encouragement. Congrats on everything you do. If people want to follow you, they go to KMC Radio, various places, KMC
Twitter,
Radio.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Absolutely. One last quick note, if I can, if people want to try to encourage their congressional members and Senate members to do the right thing, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Learn it, memorize it, know it. That's the Capitol switchboard. Call your senator, call your congressman, ask them to challenge the electors on January the 6th if we don't have resolution prior to that. 202-224-3121, and then ask for your senator or congressman by name. They will not know where you're calling from, and they will not know your delegation. 202-224-3121.
Love it. Thank you.
Just thinking.